Okay, I think I'll bring up the share slides and we'll begin. So, just get comfortable in your seat, everybody. Adjust yourself. We're going to take refuge, bodhicitta, and say the preliminary prayers. So, just try and make sure that your back is straight, your shoulders are relaxed, and just let your body breathe itself. And imagine that the ground beneath you is made of blue lapis lazuli. It's very smooth, soft and level. And the space above you is filled with offerings. And within this overflow of offerings appears the throne with Lama Tsongkhapa sitting upon it. And he's surrounded by other Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, deities, hearers, the solitary realizers, and protectors. You recollect your purpose, think that you want to become fully awakened for the benefit of all beings, and that you know that this is possible. Acknowledge that you have met a spiritual friend. They've introduced you to these teachings and you know how to make progress. And so you say, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. We think that from the heart of Lama Tsongkhapa and the spiritual entourage, rays of light and nectars stream down and wash over you and over all the people surrounding you. All negative karmas and obstructions are purified. And in their purification, your life is increased along with your virtues and Dharma realizations. So I'm cleansed by wisdom, fortified with love. Recollect the four immeasurable thoughts of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Decide to develop these yourselves and then to establish all beings in those four immeasurable states. Then affirming that, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now prevent ourselves from clinging to our practices and thereby sullying them with true grasping. Recollect the merit field above you and join me in saying the Sevanam prayer, recognizing that you yourself have no true existence, the prayer has no true existence, and the goals that we're seeking do not exist from their own side, they're dependent arisings. So reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. The recollecting emptiness, knowing that your body, speech and mind and every virtue you have accumulated is without any intrinsic nature, transform everything so it reappears as a pure land which you can offer to the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, the Lama Tsongkhapa. And join me in saying, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. So I've released the mandala. And you think that you hear the mantra of Lama Tsongkhapa resounding throughout space. And this mantra sounds like this: Oma Guru Vajradhara Sumati Kirti Siddhi Hum. Om A Guru Vajradhara Sumati Kirti Siddhi Hum. Om A Guru Vajradhara Sumati Kirti Siddhi Hum. So just say this a few times under your breath, let it resonate throughout the body and mind. Om A Guru Vajradhara Sumati Kirti Siddhi Hum. Om A Guru Vajradhara Sumati Kirti Siddhi Hum. Om A Guru Vajradhara Sumati Kirti Siddhi Hum. Think that you've received all the blessings of Lama Tsongkhapa. And decide to put his teachings into practice and to help everyone attain enlightenment. And now in your own time, just breathing in through your nostrils, exhaling through the mouth, and just letting your eyes flutter open. Okay, so what are we doing? So we're up to day 25. This is made up of two parts, today's questions and next week's. So I'll just say now, we have, after today, we have six more classes, and that will be the end of the unit. So it'll be between 3 months, something, no, three, is it, no, six classes, it's 12 weeks. Something like it over the next few months. So, and then we'll finish up, we'll have a little break, and then we'll find something else to do. Okay, let's have a look at our first class.
Just on that, Eddie, recently I was saying to Venerable Sering that, you know, we had done all this work and it was amazing, thanks to Dilma reminding us how long we've been going for and that. And I suggested that at the when we finished it all, that as a group we go over to make an offering to Kenshin Rinpoche and thank him for all the teachings that we've done for the last, on his transcripts, the last 14 years. So she said yes, she would be happy to have that organised.
Oh my gosh, well, thank you, Caroline. How about that, everybody? That'd be fantastic. Okay, so thank you, Caroline. So let's, our first question is, what are the two types of relationships between objects outlined in Buddhist logic? So Chris has had a little time and Dalma's had a little time. So Linda, what do you think? Two types
This didn't quite sit with me, but it said causal, which is which makes sense, cause and effect. But then I thought it was intrinsic, and it talks about identity and nature. Is that the same thing? I thought the two relationships were causal and intrinsic.
Okay.
But they talk about identity and nature.
Yes.
Thing, Linda. Same thing.
Okay. Thought it might be.
And Bruce, what did you come up with? And Caroline? Bruce, you go first.
I'll get Carolyn. I'm just having trouble locating my notes here. I won't be a second.
Sure. Caroline?
I had that the two primary ways were that they were a relationship of a single identity when two things are the same entity but conceptually distinct, such as product and impermanent, and relationship of different entities when there's a causality between the entities, but they're different.
So how's it go, Bruce? Is this
still back? Looking?
Okay,
sorry.
You get the general gist of it. We've all got slightly different ways of saying it, I think. So we've got two types. One is called same nature, sometimes called one, and it has to do with identity. And then the other is the relationship of causality. And the example they give is cause and effect. But as you can say, it's like there are different ways of saying it, aren't there? As we've come up, but you should, this is a general, like this is the idea to get the meaning behind it. Is this okay with everybody? So when we're looking at same nature, this occurs when two distinct concepts refer to the same factual entity. They're different in name or conception, but they're one in essence. And if you lose one, you lose the other. Whereas causality, of course, two different entities are linked because one arises from the other. The effect depends entirely on the cause for its existence. If two things are cause and effect, are they one or distinct? Sue, one or distinct?
Distinct.
Everybody should get distinct here, right? The answer is distinct. Then our third question asks, what is the Samkha assertion in relation to production? So what do you think, Sue?
They assert cause and effect have a single identity. Sprout is present at the time of the seed in a non-manifest form.
Yep, that's right. So the result is present in the cause in a non-manifest form.
Yes.
Yeah, something like this. So of course, you wouldn't open this up and say, "Oh, there's the tree in there." They're saying it's a non-manifested form, right? This picture, of course, is manifested, so you can actually see it there. But of course, that's not how it is, right? It's like they're saying, "Yeah, it's there, but it hasn't actually manifested as the actual thing, but it's there as an actual entity."
That's a great picture.
Yeah, I just sort of try and work out and get something similar, close to it. Yeah. Okay. And our next one is, so why do we as consequentialists...
Sorry, Eddie, just on that as well, just in the readings, they just also believe that everything is permanent. Because it just references, it says, since Shimakas say that the thing is known as the object of ordinary consciousness is permanent. So I just thought I'd add that as well.
Ah, well... No, you've really thrown the cat amongst the pigeons, Chris. So, where does it say that in relation to
that's on Lamrim page 319, about halfway down. So it just says, this teaching by Tandakirti clearly refutes the ideas. For example, it would be as though someone absurdly claimed that since Shimakas say that the thing is known as the object of ordinary consciousness is permanent.
I'm not so sure that what you're talking about, Chris. Does it have to do with this particular phenomenon, this type of school looking at production?
Yeah, because as I said, they're referenced here on page 319. I may have the context of the question incorrect. Just sort of refer to that they believe that things are permanent. Because it says Buddhists are unequivalent over semantics when they refute the permanence of sound while accepting the thing that is known as the object of ordinary consciousness. Right. Apologies if I've confused it, Eddie, but that was just what I'd read. Like 319.
The major idea, here is this idea, like I said, within the cause of anything lies its effect. And it's there they're sort of same entity, aren't they? From this perspective, they're the same entity. They're not two different entities as we saw back in the previous slide, right? This here, these two things are distinct. Right? The Samkhas are saying they're one, aren't they? One and the same thing. Okay, our third question is, Why do we as consequences, well, first of all, he says, why do we as consequences agree or disagree with the assertion of production? So the first thing is, do consequences agree with the Samkhya assertion of production, first of all, do they?
No.
No, they don't. They
No.
definitely do not agree
No.
with that presentation, right? Why do we disagree then?
Because the effect can't be produced from the cause that has the same identity.
Yep, that would yes, that'll do. Anyone else have something close to this? Linda?
Yeah, I had that, what Sue said, but also that because the cause transforms into the effect. So we believe the substantial cause transforms into the effect.
That's
So they can't be of the same stuff, basically.
right. Exactly. And Caroline, you okay with this or?
Yeah, I had an extra thing that if things that if the effect were already present, then production would just be endlessly done, that the effect would just continue on, would producing would never stop. It would just the effect, because the cause and effect are always together, then they're just always happening. There's
Yeah,
no
that is
process of cause to effect.
effect because they're one and the same, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. And it's just endlessly, effects.
Yeah, you've got two problems here, which will come up again in one of the other slides where they ask about they bring this up. So one is called a redundancy, and the other is called endlessness, which is just what sort of Caroline's pointed out. So if it was already there. It doesn't need to produce to be produced, does it? The effect is already there with it, on the other side is that then it will just have to keep producing the same effect again and again and again. There's a number of things that we couldn't agree with that. Yeah. So we're saying no, middle way consequence do not agree with the Samkhya presentation. We're disagreeing that for a cause to function, the result must already exist within it. Ours would be that the cause exists prior to the result. And as I think maybe Linda pointed out, or someone pointed out, that we talk about substantial causes transforming into the effect, not being the effect or the result. So, you guys find anything sort of interesting about this little section here?
I had to keep reminding myself what it was about, which was refuting inherent existence,
That's
because it's sort of,
right, Caroline. This is the big thing. Otherwise, if you slip into refuting conventional existence, which these guys are actually saying, yeah, this is how things conventionally exist, yeah, we'll get into a big problem. But if you remember we're refuting inherent existence, then everything will flow okay. But it's quite easy to forget, like you point out, Caroline, right? Yeah.
And you can kind of see how, just by looking at conventional existence, how they would have believed that that was the case.
Yeah, it's quite.
It's not that hard, not that far-fetched,
No, that's right. No, that's right. It's not that far-fetched, is it? So
No.
you can see why, we could take this idea up philosophically.
I think that idea of redundancy, that what's the point of cause and effect if things are
Already.
produced themselves is really powerful. It's really clarifies a lot.
Yeah.
Especially when you think of something like mind. So, clarity and knowing that it's produced and disintegrates and produces the next moment. So, yeah, I agree.
So if the tree like isn't in the seed, meaning the result isn't in the cause, then how can a seed produce the result?
It's sort of producing the potential for a result rather than the result itself. When you had that picture of the tree inside the seed, you can see why people would say, well, the seed is the cause of the tree, but a lot can happen between the seed and the tree, and it won't necessarily produce it.
No, that's right. The
hasn't
seed
produced it.
requires conditions.
Yeah.
So there's a dependent relationship, an interdependent relationship between the conditions and the seed. And if they all come together, of course, we'll have the result of a tree. But at the same time, doesn't that just say that the result, if you removed all the conditions, you don't have a tree that's sitting there manifest within the seed, do you? So our next question is, what are the four possible types of production that are refuted by Nagarjuna? So we've been doing this section for quite some time, So this type of, I'll put it over as you guys know this. I'm not, so this production, of course, I don't know what happened here with the writing, but it went a bit funny. So Nagarjuna's refutation here is a refutation against inherent production. And this is not conventional production that Nagarjuna is refuting, it's inherent production. The phenomena could inherently exist. They could be produced from something that was inherently themselves, from something that was inherently different, from both, and then from having no cause whatsoever. Everybody get this correct? This part, from themselves, from something else, from both self and other, and no cause at all. And remember, it's like Caroline said, this is, we're refuting intrinsic or inherent production. And inherent or intrinsic is called an extreme of production, because we're not refuting conventional production. And then our next question is, what is production from self? So production from self here is actually, you can see this would be the Samkhya presentation. Something's being produced from itself, isn't it? That's what they were sort of saying, right? The result is already within the cause. So the cause is producing itself. So production, so anyway, Sue, what do you think? What's a nice way of describing what is production from self?
I just had production in which cause and effect are inherently one.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's like the other one, isn't it? Linda.
I also added on that the cause existing by its own character produces an effect that exists by way of its own character. That was in Geshe Sopa, I believe.
Okay. And Bruce and Carolyn? How do you go, Bruce, with this one?
It's where cause and effect are the same, basically the same as what
Basically the
Steve
same
said.
thing. That's the example, isn't it? And Caroline?
Yeah, where cause and effect are intrinsically or inherently identical to each other.
To another, yeah, that's right. So it says, production from self is the philosophical belief that a result is already present within its cause. In this view, production is not the creation of something new, but the revelation of something that already exists. It suggests that a cause and effect and its effect share the exact same nature. So it was like that other one we came back, wasn't it, when we said it's either what, one, or we looked at the differences, it was causality, and then there was identity or oneness. So this is an example well, a cause already present within, a result already present within its cause.
So with all these other views, Eddie, that they talk about cause, but in dependent arising, we always make sure we say causes and conditions. And it would seem that the conditions can really, bring down the arguments too, that how can, a
A
tree
cause
exist within a
produced.
seed if it's in a complete, drought affected area and there's no rain and the seed dies?
Yeah, that's right. There's no tree there, is there? You remove the conditions, the causes can't flourish. They can't produce the effect. These guys say, no, the effect is already there. And like I say, if that's the case, let's remove all these conditions and we should have a tree if we have a seed. But
yes,
this doesn't happen.
I wonder if also an extrapolation of that is, if that was the case, then all oak trees would look exactly the same as a production. Because they say, this is obviously incongruent and not correct, but then everything would look the same height, same tree. As an extrapolation of that, if it's already in the seed, because nothing would change.
Yeah, well, change is impossible. That's right. So maybe that's where they get the idea of being permanent. But then again, the definition of permanent there might be quite different than the other. So I'm not sure, Chris. So production from self is impossible because things cannot arise from themselves, because they would either be redundant, meaning they're already there. So why do they need to arise? Like I said before. Or they never finish arising. Things cannot arise from themselves because they would either be redundant, meaning already existing, or they would never finish arising. So this is one of the three main faults in the assertion of production from self. Sue, you know what these are? You probably do.
Production becomes pointless or redundant, I think you used.
Yep.
Production becomes endless in a causal series.
Yeah.
And the same thing would have to arise again and again.
Yep. Okay. Okay. So you got how many? Did you get two or three?
Three.
Okay. So the first one's redundancy. The second, infinite regress. Because it just keeps producing.
Endless in a causal series.
Yeah.
And then the third one is the same thing would have to arise again and again. It wouldn't allow real effects, like something different, like a new seedling, to appear.
Okay. Anybody else? What did you come up with, Linda?
I could only find two.
Okay.
Just the redundancy and the production, endless production.
Okay.
I don't know where Sue got the other one. Where'd you get it from, Suze?
AI.
Yeah. Yeah, but
that's
in fact, I think the third one is a reiteration of the second, actually.
Well, it talks about new ones. There's nothing new, so that's where it differs.
Okay.
It doesn't allow for anything new to arise.
The third one I had was different. It was absurdity of worldly action, and the example was if seeds were sprouts, or if the kind of it was endless, then one could never distinguish between planting a seed and harvesting a crop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the commentary it says there's never a chance for the production of seedlings and such.
Yes, okay. So, I come with a slightly difference. I got all the first two, like redundancy, infinite regress, but then there's the failure of karma. Cause and effect can't work. So redundancy, you guys all know, is it? If the sprout already exists in the seed, there is no need for it to be born again. Right? So production sort of becomes a useless activity, doesn't it? It's redundant. In the second, infinite regress, if you argue that the sprout exists but still needs to be produced to become visible, then once it is produced, does it produce itself again? If a thing produces itself, it could never stop being produced. A seed would produce a seed, which produces a seed forever without ever turning into a sprout. That's the other thing. And then the failure of karma. If the creator of an action and the experiencer of the result are the same entity, the distinction between the person who commits a crime and the person who is punished dissolves, making ethical cause and effect impossible to track.
I think that's an excellent one, Eddie, because was it a couple of weeks ago in week 23 or whatever it was, they had quite a bit on, you know, how karma fails in the sort of this in these arguments, and
Yeah.
it was about the continuum and all of that. So I think that's a very good one.
So it's an interesting part now. So we have a number of, you know, I've got a, I've set up a, on my AI thing, 11 types of questions that help with learning. And so I've just been, you know, just get each one and go, okay, give me a question, give me the answer, and give me a nice simile or analogy to demonstrate it. So this is one of the questions is, if a result is already in the cause, why do we need to work for it? So of course, you know, what the idea is just to show the consequences of having this type of view, the Samkhya view, or the view of phenomena being produced inherently. So if a result was already in the cause, yeah, that's right, you wouldn't need to work for it, would you? So let's say, like, let's say that we have all the causes for enlightenment present already. Well, if our enlightenment was already present in that cause, hey, what's the point of studying, folks? We just wasted 10 years. So, yeah, that doesn't hold up, does it? And, you know, the Gurdwara say that if a thing creates itself, the process has no reason to ever stop or to change. You know, a seed will just keep producing a seed, 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 seed. So, but here's an interesting question. Do you treat your identity as if it were produced from itself?
Yeah, I think we do all the time.
Yeah, that's right, Chris. I think we do too, all the time. But nothing exists like that in reality. So, it's funny, it's interesting, isn't it? When you look at us, we go, yeah, no. But then when it comes to what we actually do, we find this, we're out of whack, eh? Let's do our first meditation. So you're sitting upright, your shoulders relaxed, and your back is straight. Your gaze has been softened. And in this posture, you're releasing the tensions of the morning. Just feel the weight of your body being supported by the seat. And let your breath flow naturally. And allow the mind to settle into its state of natural clarity. Create an altruistic motivation for the meditation. So I think that we're trying to cultivate an insight into inherent production. We want this insight to bring benefit to ourselves and all beings. Because by getting insight into inherent production, we can abandon grasping at inherent production. We can dismantle the roots of our confusion and our fixed views. So, we're asking us, does an effect, or is an effect, like a hidden treasure waiting for discovery? The production from self asserts that an effect is already present within its own cause. But by having this view, reality is turned into a sort of stagnant pond where nothing new can ever truly arise. It's like a Russian doll where the inner form is already pre-made. So if a result was already in the cause, why do we bother to exert effort in study and work? So birth would become redundant because we can't produce something that is already fully present. This is a bit like trying to bake a cake that is already sitting on the table, fully frosted. So how is it, or why does the logic of self-production lead to an infinite, unchanging loop? But if a thing creates itself, well, the process has no reason to ever stop. It'd be like a broken record that repeats one note without the music ever moving. So why does this sort of philosophical error destroy our ability to take ethical responsibility? Well, if the criminal and the punished are one entity, then moral accountability becomes impossible. Refuting this view helps us understand that we are, in fact, a process of change. That effects arise dependent upon causes and conditions. And that effects are not, do not have an intrinsic nature with their cause. And you're breathing in through your nostrils, just exhale. Okay, so now we come to, so we've just looked at production from self, and we've seen the problems that arise there with those three problems, right? Now we're going to have a look at the production from other. So in production from self, we found three falsehoods: redundancy, that infinite regress, and then of course the failure of karma. Karma doesn't work. Cause and if effects are within causes and a single nature. So looking at the context of production from other, what is production from other? Linda, would you like to go first this time?
So production from other is where the inherently existent cause produces an inherently existent effect.
Very good, nice.
So the cause and effect are completely unrelated.
Unrelated. That's basically, yeah, that's it. Yeah? Of course, you guys could say other things, but basically that's the thing you want to take away from it. Yeah, the causes, we have, yeah, just like you say, intrinsic cause, intrinsic effect. they are intrinsically other. So here I've got this lovely cow. If it was a cause and effect, possess their own independent intrinsic natures. They're fundamentally different from one another. Right? So if they were fundamentally, it's sort of saying, you're like, wow, so if this were the case, one of the strange things was going to happen, is it, later on, if they're intrinsically different, then cows could produce sports cars or some weird stuff like that. Right? You're going to find they have no actual relationship to one another, being intrinsically other. And then the question is, specifically, what is refuted in this refutation of production from other? Bruce, would you like to try this one?
That there can be production from unrelated phenomena, that there has to be a relation between cause and effect.
Okay. And Linda? What's the specific target here? What's refuted? Caroline?
I think I had the same as Bruce.
Okay.
So the cause and effect do not need to be related. Specific effects can't come from specific causes. Anything can come from anything. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. Caroline?
That they're specifically refuting inherent production from inherently produced others, and while consequentialists do accept things are conventionally other, they completely refute the idea of cause and effect from things that exist from their own side. So it's the inherent existence that they're refuting.
Yeah, good answer.
That's the same, but mine said the refutation is not the ordinary conventional this leads to that, but it's a stronger claim that there's a real self-established cause producing a real self-established effect, the two being inherently indifferent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in a nutshell, it's inherent otherness, right? It's self and other, but what's the other? Inherent other effect from an inherently existent cause. Because we know, yeah, I mean, there is other, isn't it? Like an effect is other than the cause, but it's not inherently other. So we've got self, other. Inherent self is being negated. Inherent other is being negated here. And later, inherent self and other will be related. And then no causes whatsoever, no inherent causes whatsoever. Okay, the next one. If a rice seedling were inherently different from its seed, would the relationship be any different from the relationship between the seedling and anything else that was inherently different from? Caroline, you go first on this one, if you wouldn't mind.
There'd be no difference, so you could have a sort of a flame from a seed.
Yeah. Bruce, are you comfortable with this, with the idea of saying?
Yeah.
So that, of course, is like no, right? There'd be no difference whatsoever. And fires could produce rice crops. Or anything else, right? Or like cows could produce cars and so forth. Next question is, like, why is this significant? Caroline, would you mind having a go at this? Why is it significant? Sweetie, Caroline, your microphone switched off. I can't hear.
Right. So it would mean that anything could produce anything if they were inherently different, that there'd be just makes no sense. It's sort of just sense at all, really.
No, that's right. So things would not make sense. There wouldn't be sort of like what we call it, like a natural order where, rice seeds produce rice crops when you have all the conditions are present. So basically what is it? Yeah. So why would the specific relationship between a cause and its effect would collapse? Because cause and effect are intrinsically other, aren't they? An effect is intrinsically other than its cause. Therefore, the relationship between cause and effect would collapse. And that was the, when the, like I said, this was the, sorry, that was the third little thing there, saying there was redundancy, infinite regress, and then cause and effect just wouldn't work at all.
I had a lot of fun doing this one because I thought, oh, there's all these significances. This is quite significant. Oh, karma doesn't work. And oh, this will happen and this will happen and that won't happen. It was quite interesting looking at it. I was like, yeah, this is really significant. Yeah. Chaos. Chaos bound, I reckon. And one of the things that I thought from this was that I couldn't do anything to make sure that I get a precious human rebirth next time because cause and effect don't work.
That's right,
So,
exactly.
all that, yeah. So I was like, oh, this is really not good. I'm glad this is not the situation.
Like if you went like with work, isn't it? Like you might be able to swear and criticize your boss and get a promotion. I
That's
don't
right.
know. All sorts of weird things would take place because cause and effect would actually cease to function as we know them to. And so this leads up to this next question, right, where it says, so how is it possible for Chandrakirti to say, if things arise in dependence upon what is other, so here it means intrinsically other, then thick darkness would arise from a flame. And that's why it could take place, isn't it? Because he actually says, so how is it possible for Chandrakirti to say, if things arise in dependence upon what is other, then thick darkness would arise from a flame? And this is the major cause for this, of course, is if you look at the phenomena being intrinsically other. If you look at the, the flame would be a cause, but its effect is darkness or some other sort of strange thing. The issue here, or the central problem, is causality versus independence, or not causality versus non-dependence. Or intrinsic nature. If a cause, like a flame, and its effect, light, are established as inherently different entities, meaning they have their own independent natures, well, can they actually still function as cause and effect, as we know it? You'd have to say no, they wouldn't. In the view of the Middle Way school, for a cause to produce an effect, there must be a connection. However, if two things are inherently other, they are as unrelated as a horse and a cow, or light and blackness. Now, Chandrakirti argues that if you accept production from other, meaning the cause is an entity existing wholly independently from the effect, then you lose the ability to regulate what causes what.
So, Eddie, in some way, does this sort of like come down to really, understanding and the belief in dependent arising versus inherent intrinsic existence? And you really have to get that kind of clear, then remember that the importance of dependent arising, because that then introduces cause and conditions and parts and labeling and all of that, doesn't it?
That's right. That's quite right, Karen. So, simply put, dependence refutes inherent self, inherent other. Itself is dependent, as we know, self is dependent, other are, well, everything is dependent. There's nothing that has any intrinsic nature. So this thing refuting all the inherentness of any of a self and other, in this case, brings us back to dependent dependency. Now, here's an interesting question, right? Oh, what is it? Is that right? No, that's coming up. So then the next one is, why would the autonomists and not the consequentialists accept production from other? So maybe you have a go at this one first, please, Sue. Why would the autonomous and not the consequences accept production from other?
Because, for example, the autonomous school hold that things have their own inherently established natures. So it seems natural for them to say a real seed existing from its own side produces a real sprout also existing from its own side, which is production from other.
Yeah, well, that's you go. Linda, what would you like to add to this?
So I said very similar, that middle way autonomous, accept existing from their own side. So they accept existing from their own natures independently, and therefore they accept that the cause exists from its own character, in other words, other, and then produces a result that exists from its own character, which is other. And then the middle way consequences don't accept existing from their own side or from their own character at all. That'll do.
Okay. Yeah, you got that's right. The major part is that first part there. So yeah, these guys, you know, they on the conventional side of things, like we're talking about just here, they have intrinsic character. But they don't ultimately.
Eddie, I read, it must have been in Ishi Soper, I think, that the middle way autonomists still say that there needs to be a relationship between cause and effect.
Yeah, that's right.
I love how they just add that little bit on the end, you know, like, yeah, we say all this stuff, but we also say this, you know, like it's.
it does say, yeah, and the relationship is one of own nature, isn't it? But then there's this funny, you know, like, if you think of, you know, the concept, then you've got all these problems again.
I wonder if that relationship, Linda, comes down for what we did with Pat, like the definition of relationship, like, I can't remember the exact word, but like, if this exists, that exists, and if you take one away, the other one gets taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're looking at the broad work with general.
It wouldn't cause and effect, would it? You take one
no.
away.
No.
Yeah, that's right. Here's one of the questions I come up with. It's a reflective question. It asks, why does our mind, or the mind of ignorance, or just even an ordinary mind, why does our mind naturally see things as inherently other? And could you give me some examples of that?
I would say it's through familiarity. We've got the imprints that give rise to the appearances.
Yes, that's right.
It's just how it looks. It just looks that way. I don't know.
We may have also been taught that it exists that way as well, Eddie.
Well, I'm sorry, Chris, what was that?
I said we may have also been taught that it exists that way through our, you know, environment and community.
Yeah. Yes.
Through different causes and conditions.
So I had one of the students, she had a chat with her daughter. So her daughter, the mother pointed out to the tall daughter that they weren't intrinsically other. And this had to do with the behavior of the person and the person. So you can have a person and their behavior. Are they intrinsically other? So her daughter, of course, had never heard of the word intrinsically, but you could talk to you can imagine talking to your child and saying, now a person has behavior, but they are not their behavior. Right? So they're not intrinsically, they're not other. So then it also, if you have the person has behavior, so they're not intrinsically the same. So then it's like, if you're not intrinsically the same, what you normally do is you flip off to go intrinsically other. And if you refute intrinsically other, the mind often goes back to intrinsically the same. Now, this be a little different for us because we know at least about this word intrinsic, right? But for ordinary people, phenomena do appear intrinsically other or intrinsically the same. Even like us, I mean, they certainly appear that way, don't they? And we have to separate it. We have to analyze and break it apart and go, yeah, but they're not. I mean, they look like that. It's like a person in their behavior. They look to be, well, a single entity, don't they? One and the same thing. So they're not. So then you draw to say, but they're not intrinsically different. And they're not intrinsically different either. So it's just like, so their mother found it very hard to find this middle ground. Now we can say, oh, the person is not their behavior, but they're not something separate from their behavior either, are they? I mean, we carry out our behaviors, we're responsible for our behavior. So there has to be like relationship there. But of course, intrinsic means no relationship, doesn't it? What is the right, you know, you have, the relationship is one of dependence, and here we have intrinsic. Well, one of the questions that asked was, how does analyzing otherness or intrinsic other change how we see the world? And can you come up with some sort of a metaphor or a simile to illustrate this? So how does analyzing intrinsic otherness or otherness change how we see the world? So one of the answers, of course, is, well, you stop sort of seeing the world as to have, to be sort of solid, because that's what the intrinsic thing is, isn't it? It's everything is separate, existing within itself as, you know, intrinsic self or intrinsic other. And there's always this a separation going on, or intrinsic sameness, meaning self, intrinsic otherness, meaning no relationship there, no causal relationship. So one of the analogy given for like what changes, it's like watching a movie, right? You get all the vivid movements and all the things taking place, and then compare that to looking at a photograph of some of the things that took place there. Right, so one introduces us to flow, and one introduces to everything being, you know, stopped still. Intrinsic brings us a sort of rigidity. Everything's like frozen. Like what you're saying before, because as it goes on to, this is what they mean by permanent, right? Nothing can change here. Like I said, what's the seed going to produce? Well, another seed. If the effect's already in the seed, what's going to happen here? Nothing can happen here. So everything's sort of like frozen. You remove that view of frozen, then everything is in flow. Everything's in flux again. Brings us back to impermanence, subtle impermanence, and interdependence. So yeah, here's our question and the answer, of course. So it's sort of, the question is to realize how production from other does not exist. Is it necessary to realize emptiness, and why? So again, we look at this, if we put the, to realize how inherent production from other, from an inherent other, does not exist. Is it necessary to realize emptiness? And why? Yes, it's necessary because it's this inherent production we're refuting. But that's what emptiness refutes, inherent existence.
So, Eddie, yes? what level of realizing emptiness? It was a funny question. Like, is it a, you know, conceptual to perceptual, at what level and everything? So it was a really kind of open question about, you know, yes is the answer, but at what level?
Well, I would think you'd, in terms of this word realizing could be a correct conceptual understanding of it, leading to the direct perception of emptiness. But so, of course, we do definitely do need the correct conceptual understanding of what inherent production entails, and this is what we've been studying. And so, even having this correct realization of the well, I'd come down on the side of conceptual here. Gosh, I think I'd come down. I'd sorry, Jesus, my finger keeps slipping backwards and forwards. Caroline, I think it is conceptual here. I'm just saying that I'm just remembering one time in a class where Khyentse Rinpoche was teaching, and we ended up on the side of like having a correct conceptual understanding, realization, a correct understanding. He was talking about just like you're saying, Keller, like what sort of level of realization are we talking about here? So I think then if it was required of us to have the perceptual realization of emptiness, that this refutation of inherent production took place only then, means we wouldn't be able to refute it now, would we?
No, well, that's what I'm thinking. Otherwise, we sort of have to jolly well wait to the path of seeing.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
given that what the implications are of trying to understand all this to develop, along the path, it's a big ask to wait till then. So I came down with conceptual
Conceptual.
and work on it.
No, this is right, isn't it? Otherwise, like I said, here we are discussing this on a conceptual level. If we just assume none of us have a direct insight into emptiness, right? So we have to refute it where we are, don't we? And we can. Because, like you say, you sit there and start looking, just like looking for inherent self, inherent other, like in relationship to oneself, for instance, if the aggregates were inherently other than the self, we know what happens then, don't we? It would mean that anything that affected the body wouldn't affect you. And if something affected you, it wouldn't affect the body. You go, why? Because they're inherently other. Well, we know that that's just not true. And we also know that we cannot be inherently the same. Because if they were, there'd be five selves, or one aggregate for one self. So neither of those things work. So we're getting a clearer and clearer conceptual understanding of it. And even when we meditate, it'll still be at the conceptual level, but we see that what was assumed to be inherently existent, rediscover that even these meditations is not the case. So I'm with you on this one, Carol. I think it has to be correct conception. Now, next question. How is production from self and other refuted? See, if I have quite a few different answers here, I'm just going to shoot up and go down and go. Okay, Sue, would you like to have a go at this first one? How is production from self and other refuted?
Well, we've already done it.
Okay,
So,
now
according
we
to
do.
my AI, you just use the same logic again. Like you separate them out. Production from mine did anyway. Production from self isn't possible because of the three faults, and production is not production from other is not possible because of two faults. That there's, that sameness of otherness, and that doesn't work, and that all collapses. So mine separated the two out and just more or less was the same arguments that we had before.
If you got Chris, you got the armor. If you want to hazard an answer, go right ahead. Otherwise, drink tea and enjoy.
Eddie, even in Lamb Rim, it basically just reflects what Sue said. It said you just use the same logic to basically, take the logic of refute and self, and then refute another, and then you just combine that thinking, was basically the what I'd read a bit earlier today.
Okay. Linda, Bruce, Linda, you go first. What do you think?
No, that's what I had as well. Same
Okay.
as Sue, and then same as Chris, yeah.
Yeah, Bruce.
Yeah, much the same. Since there's neither production from self alone or production alone, there's no production from the combination of the two.
And Caroline.
Yeah, just the same. It just sort of strengthens the argument from having done the separate ones of self and other. It just
Okay.
makes it a strong argument that it's not possible.
Yeah, so I mean, my mind's slightly different. But it's the same sort of thing, right? Because this is what we're doing, isn't it? We're applying the special insight. We're getting insight into whether phenomena inherently exist as either inherently self or inherent other. So we're getting like this. When we go into the sentient thing, we're doing is applying special insight. We're getting insight into whether phenomena inherently exist as the same or other.
Andy, can you give me a definition of production?
Not right off the top of my head, no. I'll send you one though. I mean, I've got enough books here that go production. But again, it might be tricky, Caroline, because of the different tenant systems.
No.
Yeah. And I'm sure we've all got this last one correct, right? This goes, what is it? Complete the following. Take a sprout. It is not inherently produced because, I think there's a couple of different answers you can give here, but let's go this. Caroline, how about you go first?
Because it is a dependent arising, and that's why, I just really strongly remember inherent existence and dependent
Right.
arising is the one that's its antidote.
Okay, good, good. Bruce, what do you come up with?
Because it's not produced from any of the four, from
Yep.
self, other, both, or
That's
different
right. Good, good.
causes.
Yeah, that's the other one. Yep. Linda?
Yep, because it is not produced from any of the four extremes of production.
Yeah, that's it. Good, good. Yep. And Sue?
Fine.
Chris?
Because it is produced based on causes and conditions.
Okay. So you take either of these things because it's a dependent arising, that's that catch-all. Or like you've said, Bruce, because it's not inherently produced from any of those four positions, from self, from inherent self, inherent other, from inherent both, from neither. I think either way is fine here. Okay, let's do a final meditation. I think, oh no, we've got a few more left. We've got meditation and two more questions. So again, just adjust your posture. Just let your shoulders drop and your back lengthen. And now establish an altruistic intention to realize that inherent production is impossible. So may this realization be of benefit to us and all beings. So imagine a seed and a sprout. Is the sprout hiding inside the seed? If you say no, then is the sprout a totally different object like a stone sitting next to the seed. But if you said, yes, the sprout is hiding inside the seed, then why does it need water and time to appear? It's already there. And again, if yes, then how can the seed affect the sprout? How can the seed affect the sprout if they are totally cut off from each other? They just drop that investigation of inherent self and other as it refers to a seed and its sprout. Just breathe normally, naturally. Now, was your identity, yourself, was that existent yesterday? And is it existent today? Are they exactly the same? If the self of yesterday is the same as the self of today, it means you have not aged and you have not learnt anything between yesterday and today. Now, is the self of yesterday and the self of today two different identities, two intrinsically different identities? Is the self of yesterday, or your identity of being and being a person of yesterday, totally different from who you are today? They are totally different. Well, you're not responsible for yesterday's actions. So, not intrinsically the same, not intrinsically other. So, what's left over? What other choice can we make about how we exist? In terms of our identity, we dependently arise, we exist as dependent designation, the name I, imputed to body and mind. Not intrinsically the same, not intrinsically other. And breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth, your eyes half open. We'll come up to this next question. So I've gone, not intrinsically the same, not intrinsically other, not both, because the faults of both arise there. So now we come up to causeless production. And here we just have a couple of questions. What is it? And the second question, why is it impossible? So causeless production, Sue, would you like to go first?
Causeless production means asserting that something is produced without any causes or conditions at all.
Yeah, very nice. That's good. Very simple, straightforward. Anybody else? Linda, what do you think for causeless production?
Yeah, I just said that it arose from one's own essence. I must have got that from somewhere.
Okay.
Same thing, no
That
cause
is,
and conditions,
yeah.
own essence, yeah.
Bruce?
Yeah, spontaneous origination arising from one's own essence.
Okay, Caroline.
Yes, I had the same. I also had that it was a nihilistic view.
Yeah, there's all sorts of funny things are going to happen, isn't there, without with causeless production. In fact, they have all the faults of the other st the steps we've gone through, basically. And so, what did I have here? So Tsongkhapa refutes this, of course, doesn't he? By saying, if this is the case, then it'd be just chaotic, wouldn't it? Anything could arise from anything, then. You're saying, or not at all. Because there are no causes to produce them. So you've got peculiar. What's the idea? What is the point of proving causeless production? Mean, so what? If we refute causeless production, where do we want to end up? On what side of thinking?
Dependent origination.
Yeah, that's right. Dependent production. So one of the. I also have the AI to create little things to do to help you understand some of the stuff. So what it says is, identify one object in your environment. This is like I take a house plant or a meal, right? Now, so to look at anything in your room, list five specific conditions that had to occur for this object to exist right now. And by doing so, of course, you see that everything has a history of dependence. Everything is depending upon something else. And of course, if everything is depending or dependent, depending, dependent, then it doesn't have intrinsic existence or causeless existence, non-dependent existence. So the next question asks, why is causeless production impossible? So here we've got a number of different things. And these are just some of them, right? Again, yeah, so some things here to take from this. Things do not just pop out of thin air. And think about logic dictates that results are restricted by their specific causes. And in practical terms, our happiness depends upon our actions. Therefore, we need to find the right actions to cultivate. And because things do arise dependent upon causes, then they are empty of any inherent existence. Being empty of inherent existence means that they exist dependently. And that brings us to the end of our class. So we had 18 questions today. Man, they went by very quickly, seems to me. What's not so easy to do here, why I think why the AIs can be quite useful here, is to look at the answers that you get. And ask the AI to go, well, how useful is that for me in everyday life? Now, what can I do with this, like practically? Because it won't make much difference to us if it's all just philosophical and just stays up in the head and we, get right answers and everything. It won't make a jot of difference to us. So, just try something out like that. So, like I said, if you're using the AIs, ask for it. Create a question of some type where it says, how is this practically relevant to my everyday life? Or if you've got something going on at home that's a little difficult, ask it, how Am I perceiving it in one of these four wrong ways? Am I perceiving this event as if it has an inherent self, or its inherent other? Which of these four wrong ways? How am I looking? Which of these four wrong ways am I ascertaining this event? So remember that, that our major problems are here is taking intrinsic existence to be true. Okay, so we have this 18 questions next class. I've got most of them done, of course, but we'll have those in a fortnight. And here's the material you could use. It's the same as last week's because we're just finishing off the other questions that were there. We can dedicate them, our study towards becoming awakened for the benefit of all beings. So please join me in saying, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, bodhicitta, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. Wish-granting, wish-fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world. To the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And then finally, for the return of Rinpoche. In holding and spreading the Muni's precious and complete teachings for explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that is never discouraged. Incomparable Venerable Guru, to you I make this request.